Hi, I'm Steve Dace. So if you're looking for a summer worldview camp, this is the place to be. July 16th through the 20th, we're going to encourage your kids to become the next generation of cultural leaders. We've got pastors like Douglas Wilson, filmmakers, cultural critics and commentators like myself and Matt Walsh from The Daily Wire. Sign up at calledconference.ninja. Again, Moscow, Idaho, July 16th through the 20th, calledconference.ninja.
Hello and welcome back to the New St. Andrews College podcast. My name is Ben Merkel. I'm the president of New St. Andrews, and I am here with NSA Fellow of Humanities, Dr. Jonathan McIntosh.
Hi, Ben. Good to be back.
Yeah, so this is our second episode. Last time we talked a little bit about political and economic philosophy, and this time we are going to talk about Tolkien and Aquinas. Dr. Mack just published a book on, of all things, the metaphysical theology of J.R.R. Tolkien and St. Thomas Aquinas. Can you explain how it's possible for those two things to come together and how it is that that's a book?
I can try. The book project was an idea that came out of a result of a conversation I had with a friend of mine who was over visiting while I was taking a course back in grad school on the metaphysics of Aquinas. And as I was explaining, we were talking about Tolkien's creation myth at the beginning of the Silmarillion, which many people have started to read and few have ever finished. I was explaining Tolkien's creation myth to my friend. As I said, I was taking this class on Aquinas's metaphysics, and I found myself just naturally drawing upon Aquinas's metaphysical ideas and how he thinks about existence and its createdness. And I thought, wow, this works really well to explain Tolkien. I wonder if I can make a term paper out of this. So that's where it started, and it turned into.
Okay, now this started at grad school. Where were you doing grad school at?
This was at the University of Dallas.
Okay, and that's where you did your doctorate?
That's right.
Okay, so it starts as a term paper, and then it snowballs from there into a full dissertation?
That's right, yes. I had way more material than I could fit into the paper, and so from there it became a dissertation.
And then from there a book. And who published the book?
It's published by Angelico Press. It was published in December of last year, 2017.
Okay. So tell me how this thesis then developed out of there.
Yeah, so one of the things, the main thing I'm doing in the book is showing how Tolkien is a deeply metaphysical thinker. What does that mean? Well, metaphysics classically is the philosophy of being, the study of being. That sounds pretty abstract, and it is. It's the most abstract discipline that there is, the study of being. The idea is that every science, every discipline, study some aspect of creation. You can only study what's there. You can't study what's not there. So every discipline, whether it's biology or physics or whatever it is, study some aspect of created reality. Metaphysics is simply just that study of the most general features of reality. And so it studies things like causality and motion and change and, God and as the cause and source of everything. The thesis of the book is that Tolkien is a deeply metaphysical thinker. He thinks about being, mm-hmm. and that metaphysical perspective of Tolkien at a deep level animates and gives a kind of structure and intelligibility to his work of subcreation, his secondary world, as he called it, of Middle Earth that we read about in works like The Lord of the Rings.
And that seems, I mean, from my limited grasp of Tolkien, that seems quintessentially him, where, you know, in order for him to create this alternative world, he has to create all of the languages, the geography, but he has to create the metaphysic for it as well, the metaphysical explanation for it.
He creates it, or he's drawing from the metaphysics of the world. He says in one of his letters how the task of subcreation is really to unfold and examine the possibilities of God's own act of creation. So it's not so much creating an alternate metaphysic as it is drawing from the metaphysics, the only metaphysics that there is, the metaphysics that God has created. And then what the sub-creator does is exploit the gaps or looks for other possibilities, other ways in which God might have made things.
Now you were saying that that you found Aquinas useful in helping to explain what was going on in Tolkien. Was that just a happy circumstance, or do you think Tolkien was actively drawing from Aquinas in this?
Yeah, I don't think it was active in the sense that he had Aquinas open in front of him, though, as you may recall, you helped me with some of my research. You went and were able to actually get your hands on Tolkien's actual physical copy.
Yeah, this actually, it's a little side story that's worth telling because it's one of the highlights of my life, is that Jonathan emails me. I'm in England, and he emails me to say that he is, you know, working on this project of connecting Tolkien to Aquinas, and he has found the book dealer that actually has Tolkien's personal copy of Aquinas' Summa and has permission for me to go over and look at it. And so I get to go to the back room in this book dealer and open up, and it's full of, full meaning there were five or six of these little slips of paper that Tolkien had, you know, ripped off and scribbled a little note on and then left them as bookmarks in the text. And I have to say, this is my Christian virtue was tested at this point more than at any other moment in my life, where I'm wondering what would it, you know, how bad would it be if I just snuck one of these little handwritten Tolkien notes from my own.
Yeah, look, somebody littered in this book. I think I'll clean it up.
Yeah, exactly. But I, you know, virtue won, and I left them all in place. But it was a really fun chance to do that. But I'm just curious, what came of that? How much were you able to do that connection?
So, honestly, very little. Aquinas or Tolkien never refers to Aquinas in any of his major writings. So the idea is that it's an implicit Thomism. Tolkien was a Roman Catholic of a very traditional bent. So given when he lived and what his values were, it would have been inconceivable for him not to have been influenced by either Aquinas or others who were trained in Aquinas. So a good chunk of the introduction of the book is just trying to trace what kind of Thomism is Tolkien's. What do I mean by that? And so I draw as many connections as I can through figures like G.K. Chesterton, who is very influential on Tolkien's view of things. And Chesterton wrote a very famous biography of Aquinas. But in the end, I conclude that really the proof is in the pudding, that to understand Tolkien's Thomism, we really need to just look at his work, look at his philosophical and theological reflections on his work, which there are many. Mm-hmm. You look at his letters, you look at some of his lesser known pieces where as he's working through his legendarium, as he called it, his Middle Earth mythology, he's intensely concerned with crafting a world that has what he calls, in his famous essay on fairy stories, he's trying to craft a world that has what he calls the inner consistency of reality. It has this logical structure to it, and in order to do that, yet in the mode of fantasy and fairy story, he's having to draw on the great thinkers who've spent a lot of time thinking about just what is the structure, what is the consistency of reality, so that Tolkien can mirror that in his own secondary world. And I argue that the natural go-to person for somebody like Tolkien, given what he's trying to do, is the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas.
Okay. Now, with many authors, you could easily read the text and not really need to do serious metaphysical speculation in order to process the text. But I think actually, as somebody who's, I'm not super up to date on my Aquinas, nevertheless, a quick read through Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, it's actually the metaphysic is it does seem actually rather fairly significant, his definition of evil and things like that. Where are the places where the casual reader of Tolkien's, maybe not the Silmarillion, but maybe Lord of the Rings, what are some of the places where the casual reader is going to most obviously come in contact with where he's bringing in his this metaphysic?
Yeah, good question. So I guess just sticking with something like the Lord of the Rings.
Sure.
This is going to sound somewhat paradoxical, but I would say the fact that the Lord of the Rings never at any point explicitly refers to God, and yet Tolkien, in one of his responses to a review of the work, he wrote how the main conflict in the Lord of the Rings is it's mainly about God and why he alone deserves divine honor. And that's, I find that a very fascinating claim. How can you say that a work that never mentions God is basically about God? Well, clearly, Tolkien's thinking about God in a way very differently from the way certainly a lot of Christian authors think of what it means to tell stories that are Christian. For them, God has to be very explicit and right. constantly referred to. For Tolkien, it meant God needs to be never mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is for Tolkien, by not making God a character, you might say, an explicit character in The Lord of the Rings, it doesn't mean that he's pushing God out. It means that the entire work, from start to finish, is able to be about God. So that seems kind of counterintuitive, that where would I point to in The Lord of the Rings to show that, you know, Tolkien has this very metaphysical sensibility in how he thinks about creation and God and so forth. I'd point to the fact that the work never mentions God, mm-hmm. and yet he says it's all about God. Well, how is that the case? It's because everything is able to be about God. The entire world is Tolkien's fictional world is a theistic world, and you have to go back to the Silmarillion to get that. Mm-hmm. The entire world is able to be revelation because he doesn't isolate revelation to particular moments where he's talking about God.
Okay. And what are some of the ways in which your work on this topic then has set the trajectory for later teaching and research interests for yourself?
In the second chapter of the book, what I do is I set up a kind of dialogue between St. Thomas Aquinas on the one hand, a later medieval thinker named William of Ockham on the other, and then using Tolkien as a way of adjudicating this medieval debate over really the question of divine power and possibility. What does it mean for something to be possible for God? And Aquinas's view was that for something to be possible for God, the nature of possibility itself has to reveal something about God, that all possibility is really divine possibility. What you have in later medieval thought after Aquinas is this shift, and William of Ockham becomes a major figure, where possibility begins to be thought less in terms of theological terms and more in bare, abstract, logical terms. And so really the nature of possibility gets divorced, you might say, from God. And what I do is I use Tolkien as a way of framing this medieval debate that ends up being really, really important for understanding the trajectory of later modern thought. And what I point out is that really for Tolkien, the question of, Tolkien's not thinking so much about God's possibilities as he's thinking about what are the possibilities, the imaginative possibilities that are open to a human sub-creator. Mm-hmm. So, and Tolkien really had to wrestle with this question, what fantasy, the nature of fantasy is strangeness, is unfamiliarity, taking our world that God has made and tweaking it. Well, from a Christian standpoint, that raises a big problem. Like where do we get off tweaking mm-hmm. God's world? And so Tolkien really had to wrestle with this of what's the propriety of fantasy and fairy story in altering introducing alterations and changes to the way God made the world. And Tolkien's answer is, when we are subcreating truly, we are not so much picking out alternate worlds or other ways in which God might have done things, but what we're doing is we're imaginatively exploring, ultimately, the way God actually has made things. And so Tolkien really thought of subcreation and fairy and fantasy as a celebration and as a exhibition of the profound variety in which God has made the things that he's made. That's a long answer to the question of what trajectory is this set for my current areas of research. So lately I've just been pursuing that idea. What does it mean for something to be possible for God? And it really began with my study of Tolkien and his dealing with the question of what does it mean for something to be possible for those of us who have been made in God's image.
So what are your current research projects? Are you working on anything at the moment in terms of writing?
One of the main areas of research is in the study of Saint Anselm. So I teach classes and do research on Anselm, looking at him in light of this question of what does it mean for something to be possible for God.
Well, that's great. Well, we're out of time for today, but do join us next week as we continue discussing with Dr. McIntosh, who is NSA's very own Captain of the Possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
I'm a 2009 graduate of New St. Andrews College, and I'm a commercial property manager.
3 kids at Logos, 1 at home still, and I do flowers on the side out of our house. When you have these little people that you're responsible to shepherd, you realize I need to know what I'm talking about because they need to have a firm foundation and they need deep roots so that they don't get blown over and that they're ready to stand up for the truth.
I am a programmer. The language aspect of NSA is a fantastic preparation for any sort of programming.
I'm a real estate broker here in town. I think absolutely the perfect education for being in sales of really any kind.
I actually put it to a lot of great use when I was working in the political realm.
I am a pastor in Central Coast, California. Whatever vocation you take, it'll make you take that seriously because you're seeing it through the lens of the sovereignty and lordship of Christ.
For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu.